Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 13-year-old Darlene and her friend Carol were clothes shopping. "What do you think?" Darlene held up a bright orange sweater. "I could wear it when school starts with those cool pants I got for my birthday." Carol looked it over carefully. "It's pretty neat, but I guess you should try it on to be sure."
"Great idea,"
said Darlene brightly, heading for the dressing room. "And if it doesn't fit me, it'll probably fit you." "Remember," Carol cautioned, "I'm starting a new school, one with uniforms, so I'll just be buying stuff to hang out in on weekends." From a parent's perspective, what are the pros and cons of school uniforms for our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests today can help us understand the pros and cons of school uniforms. Jeffrey Jones is head of the Potomac School, a non-sectarian private school for kindergarten through high school in McLean, Virginia. He's the former principal of Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, a public magnet school in Fairfax County, Virginia. Jeff is also the father of a college-age son. Welcome to Parents' Perspective.
Thank you.
Bruce Stewart is head of Sidwell Friends School, a private school pre-kindergarten through grade 12 in Washington, D.C. He has been an educator for 42 years and has three grown daughters and two grandsons. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Stewart.
You're welcome.
Mr. Stewart, Sidwell Friends School does not have uniforms, right?
That's correct.
Why is that?
Well, Friends have had a long tradition of respecting the individual dignity and worth of each individual and wanting to recognize their right to self-expression in ways with which they're comfortable. Interestingly, among early Friends, there was a pattern of dress by choice, not by obligation. Plain dress and plain speech characterized those students. So I suspect if you look back in our early history, you'd find fairly uniform dress, although the dress was not uniforms. Today, I think students are more accenting the prerogative to express themselves individually and to make statements about who they are and what they value artistically or athletically or musically. I think for many of our students, they also are inclined to respect individuality within community. We're seeking a balance so that you can't run roughshod over reasonable social norms or disregard any kind of boundary in your dress patterns. We do have a testimony in our communities against violent clothing. So we as people out of Friends tradition and a strong belief in pacifism and using reason to solve human conflict rather than violence, we discourage students from wearing anything that's either profane, inappropriate language, or anything that suggests violence, so that the time when people were wearing chains and other things that would have not have been welcome in Sidwell or most Friends communities.
Are there any other guidelines or restrictions in terms of dress?
I think what we call acceptable taste, we want people to be dressed appropriately, and that sometimes is a struggle because it's very difficult to define that in any absolute way. So the deans in our various divisions have a closet full of sweatshirts and sweatpants, and occasionally we may ask a student to adorn those for the day and admonish them about coming back dressed differently. Occasionally a student, if it's a repeat offender, would be sent home to change and come back. But it's never worried us, particularly if someone has orange hair or an earring. Most of our students, I would say, conform to norms dictated not by the school but by the culture. And I think Madison Avenue has much more to do with what our kids wear to school than we do.
Mr. Jones, the Potomac School has chosen to have students in grades 4 to 8 wear uniforms. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, there are a number of reasons probably, and some of them that Bruce has even touched upon, interestingly enough, that biggest reason probably for us has been to sort of address some of the socioeconomic issues that we, you know, as a school have tried to create a community that is broad and deep in diversity, and that we want students who come from wealthy homes as well as students who come from less wealthy homes or maybe even beyond scholarship to know that it's not about the dress that we're really bringing students to the school and wealth and or any of those kinds of issues, but we want them to come to know and support and care for each other independent of some of those things. And so the uniforms have a remarkable way of bringing us to a common experience and sort of leveling the socioeconomic traditions and experience of kids. But they also provide a kind of a social focus that's different. Instead of some of the Madison Avenue influences and other influences that kids are sometimes responding to that aren't particularly about who I am as an individual, but are more about maybe what people might expect of me, are eliminated by the uniform. And it really is possible for students to think about how they are individual and or different from one another, independent of the influences of others who would dress them or sort of dictate how they might dress, and that fashion has become something that is so commercialized, it's very difficult for kids, and particularly young kids, to sort out, you know, is this something I want to wear and I would choose to express myself, or is this something somebody else, including maybe even parents, of course, would like to have me dress in?
What are the uniforms? What do the kids wear?
Well, there are a variety of options that children have. In the fourth through sixth grades, the girls are typically in a jumper outfit that is in the school colors and plaid and allows them some blouse choice underneath the jumper, but that's pretty typically very plain. And they wear shorts under the jumpers, and it provides a kind of an active outfit that allows them to, you know, sort of be appropriately dressed in all sorts of occasions. And so if we're doing something that's a little dress-up, it looks dressy, but if it's time to get out in the playground and really tumble all over, then you're comfortable in that outfit as well. And in the wintertime, they have choices of slacks, and they can wear khaki slacks similar to the boys, or they can wear blue corduroys similar to the boys' options. And there is a shorts option as well, khaki shorts option. So you can be in that jumper or in the shorts or in the trousers. And the boys similarly have just trousers and shorts options, and then a white or blue shirt kind of option, plain shirt. And in the intermediate grades, seventh and eighth grades, the girls are in a pleated skirt and a white blouse, and the boys are in khaki trousers and a shirt and tie. And they have shorts options and corduroy options in those grade levels as well.
Seventh and eighth grade boys are then wearing mm-hmm. ties, not jackets, but they're
right.
wearing ties to
mm-hmm.
school.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on school uniforms.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Jeffrey Jones, head of the Potomac School in McLean, Virginia, and Bruce Stewart, head of the Sidwell Friends School in Washington, D.C., about school uniforms. My question is, what decided that it was going to be 4th through 8th grade? Why that range?
Well, actually, the upper school has a dress code as well, but they're not uniforms. And so even 9 through 12, we make statements about what it's appropriate dress. And so the boys would continue in that same khaki slacks and shirt and tie. And the girls, you know, are allowed different skirts and dresses at that point. But there are still sort of dress codes and restrictions in that sense. And so really, once you enter fourth grade, you're entering into a Potomac uniform.
What is there in the middle school population that makes it more desirable to put those kids into uniform?
It's a time, we think, when children are particularly sort of becoming more aware of themselves and independent from others and are still learning about who they are and who they're to become. And, of course, their bodies are changing rapidly. And sometimes it's a time when you want to accent that, and there's other times when you want to sort of maybe let's go a little slower with that. And the uniforms sort of, again, take that out of the picture. It's not through clothing then that you learn to sort of discover who you are and what you're going to express, but in other ways. And so it's more comfortable for the kids in many ways. It's also a time when we really want them focusing as they grow intellectually And it actually, the uniforms, surprisingly, allow for more of an academic focus, more of a focus on learning to express yourself in ways that are, in some ways, more appropriate. You learn to use the language and you learn to develop interests and connect to things that are going on in school that instead of maybe sort of falling into the this is who I am and how I dress and that sort of thing. It also permits opportunity for change more easily, that, you know, you're not sort of labeled. You show up once with orange hair, people sort of look for you forever to see what you're going to do, and you may somehow feel even caught in that, you know. And the uniforms sort of level that in some ways.
Mr. Stewart, do you feel that the socioeconomic status of the students has a connection with the decision for no uniforms?
Well, I think one of the things that's characteristic of French schools in general is that it's hard to make any absolute statements. You'll find some very affluent people who dress down very purposely. You'll find some of our scholarship students who have a concern to dress up very purposely. And then you'll find deviations within those groups. But one of the things we do in our community, we have nearly $3 million annually in scholarship assistance to students. So we have a relatively diverse student body, economically as well as in race and political perspective and gender and the like. But we identify about 1% of the 14% that we allocate in that regard to help students who have special needs for tutoring, for clothing, for sportswear, for tickets to plays and travel. So we often can offset differences where there may be a concern, but no one in the community knows who those students are. There's no public listing. There's no public notification. But you simply are aware as a family when you come, if you receive tuition assistance, you're eligible for that same level of tuition assistance for all the activities that the school does. So if you're on 50% aid, you can get 50% help from the institution for purchasing textbooks or for sports equipment or other things that are necessary to be a full member of the community. So it levels itself out pretty well, and it's very hard to make a generalization about how people dress and the status that they represent. Some kids are in stark rebellion against their families, and they want to make a counter statement. Other kids are more driven by the need to be popular. And some take their cues from television and Britney Spears. And so it's different strokes for different folks, and lots of kids coming in very different manner and means, depending on oftentimes on who they are and what their issues are about. Clearly, one thing that impacts dress is the diversity in the community by race. There are different habits and patterns in a Hispanic community than there may be in a traditionally Caucasian affluent community. There are students who come from more characteristically African-American neighborhoods. There are things that are unique to those communities and cultures, which we think makes us a richer, nicer, more vibrant place. And so those expressions show themselves. But as I said earlier, even in those instances, you can't find a consistent pattern. Some students from neighborhoods will dress like students from other areas and vice versa.
Do you find a lot of copycat stuff going on? Kids who have made friendships across ethnic lines or so forth then adopt some of that?
You certainly do. And certain styles, I mean, wearing your cap backwards caught on, wearing pants low slung caught on. Those were experiences for us that were brought into our community primarily by African-American students initially, but other kids caught on to that. So it is partly, I think, what kids see reflected back to them on television and the media. I think there's a tremendous impact of the culture on what kids choose and do. And not inconsequentially, as I talk to a lot of parents, is what's available in the marketplace. Many parents are chagrined by the low level of choice they have when they shop with their children at the traditional places for teenage clothing and would like different kinds of things available to them, but find it's just simply not there. And the kids, of course, are concerned to be current. And that results often in struggles with parents and kids about what is and isn't appropriate. We also see more than a few students who leave home attired in one manner and arrive at school attired in another manner. So sometimes parents are mortified to discover what it is their children are wearing in the school setting as compared to what they left home. And so kids are creative.
That's interesting. We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on school uniforms.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking today with Jeffrey Jones, head of the Potomac School in McLean, Virginia, and Bruce Stewart, head of Sidwell Friends School in Washington, D.C., about school uniforms. My middle son, when he was about in sixth grade, wanted to wear some kind of shirt that had a logo on it, and I was into buying their clothes in the discount places where I could get two or three shirts for the same price. So he said, I want a clothing budget, and I want to make those choices myself. And it's very interesting. We let him do that. We set up a clothing budget. He wanted some kind of corduroy shorts and a shirt with a logo, which cost much more than I would normally spend on just one pair of shorts and a shirt. That is the son who grew up very much opposed to that kind of clothing, does not like any logos, doesn't like anything that reeks of status symbols or anything. So it's interesting. You know, we let him do it for a little while. He didn't do it long.
When my older three were in high school, they all looked like they had picked their clothes from the trash can behind Goodwill. And we had discussions, I remember with my oldest one, about how big the holes could be in his pants and, you know,
and
where they could be and so forth. And, oh, I just remember being so mortified by how they looked. And, of course, now they've all grown up to look perfectly normal as far as I can tell.
When they leave the house.
That's true.
It is interesting that the parents, of course, are the greatest fans of the uniforms, that it eliminates a lot of that sort of conflict even in some of the discussion. Of course, it doesn't make it go away entirely because the kids do dress as they will on the weekends and maybe even more flamboyantly as a result of having worn uniforms through the week, you know. But it does simplify things. It sort of eliminates some of the breakfast conflicts. You know, everybody knows what that child's going to look like when they leave the door and when they arrive at the schoolhouse, you know. Mm-hmm. So
now, can the kids wear uniforms and have orange hair?
No. No, no orange hair, no.
No strange, eyebrow rings.
No. So all of that is sort of managed in that sense, you know.
So and, it comes with it.
Actually, at various points in a child's life, they love it or don't, you know. The kids can't wait till fourth grade when they can get their uniforms, and their great sense of pride associated with that, school pride and sort of a transitional point. I'm no longer a child. I'm in this uniform of the school kind of thing, you know. By eighth grade, they're ready to have more options, you know, and have more opportunity to express themselves in that ways that Bruce has talked about.
Have we left anything out about clothing being an issue for students on scholarships?
Well, the interesting thing I've seen is that the idea of a used clothing exchange has really taken off. And so beyond the notion of our uniforms have to be new, actually we celebrate the idea that you can pass these uniforms on. And so families that I'm sure would not normally be buying used clothing are a part of that process just as anybody else might be. And so we have the flea market and the exchange day and the trading posts. And at many of the school events, particularly early in the year, there are opportunities to exchange clothing that, you know, still has a lot of wear left in it and that was simply outgrown and it's passed along. And
but there are no lines drawn there. It may not
no,
be scholarship
in fact,
students at all.
It's a kind of a leveling mm-hmm. thing that actually makes that acceptable across the board. So it's very interesting to see that kids can be across the board very comfortable with the idea that somebody else has used this, but I'm going to be wearing it.
If you had the students vote pro or con regarding wearing uniforms, we sort of had a hint of this from you just a minute ago, Mr. Jones, but either of you, How do you think they'd vote? I have a feeling we could almost guess the outcome.
Well, we have, you know, certainly listened to students and in times made adjustments to the outfits as a result of the ways in which students have responded. So there are nuances that allow students to have a voice, and there are times when in the spring, when it becomes really hot, you don't have to wear a tie kind of thing, and on it goes. And so it's really not a vote against uniforms as much as it is more of a sense of, again, having some say and some opportunity to be heard about the uniforms. I think, in fact, as I listen to the kids, they're pretty comfortable with the idea that clothes are not a part of the picture, that you know, we've done other things to help them to come know each other. It's a small school, and so, in fact, the kids, 50% of our students join us in the first through third years and stay with us through their senior year. So they've lived together for 10 and 12 years, and they really come to know each other so deeply and so intimately in so many ways because of all of the experiences of the school, that the clothes become less of an issue, and they really know each other in more powerful ways.
Mr. Tewitt, what do you think would happen if you announced at a meeting of the students that you've decided to take the school back to the early Friends tradition of wearing plain clothing?
It would be profound consternation. They'd remind me of the other Quaker doctrine of continuing revelation. I think in our community there's a great sense of autonomy, independence, and individuality that students prize. But I wouldn't suggest that it's primarily tied up in their clothing. And I think both for Jeff and myself, right, most of our young people, I think, are more engaged in ideas and thought and their expression in the arts or in their academic life, I think, is the prevailing value. And it's the content of the individual, not the packaging, that I think kids come to prize most. And so there's surprisingly little focus overall. I think generally people are pretty much indifferent to what people are wearing. I don't find it as a compelling point of focus or concern in the community.
Do the kids have any way of talking about that or discuss? Does it ever come up? The kids want to discuss a dress code or they want to discuss what's okay and what's not okay?
Sure. There's a student government process, particularly in middle and upper school, where students can have a voice, and we not infrequently hear from them in respect to our dress guidelines that we have in terms of taste and the like, and they would always probably want to push the edge of the boundary further than we would like to see it go. But I would say it's not a variable that we hear much about, unless, as you suggested, we sought to change it radically. I think that would hasten to the top of the agenda would be my guess, and that we'd be embroiled in it more than I think would be desirable.
You know, actually, Bruce, you raised an interesting point, and both of us have worked in a variety of different kinds of schools, and this is actually my first experience in a school with uniforms. Some of the things we might want to accomplish with uniforms in some schools might be better accomplished by having a stronger academic focus and program, a more of a vision and sense of purpose for why we're in school and how we're going to learn to really express ourselves and communicate with one another and be independent but supportive of each other at the same time. And as much energy as you might put into sort of changing the culture to have uniforms, it'd be more productive probably to put that energy into building that very strong academic program.
Jeff makes a powerful point in saying that the more you expect of young people, I think the more you get from them. It isn't just the life of the mind that gets deepened and enriched, but their sense of social conscience, their commitment to community service, their respect for their neighbors and friends, for property in the community, for the passerby on the street, all gets elevated in a very important way.
Perhaps we could give parents some resources that they could then take with them to decide whether they wanted to advocate for or against uniforms in their schools. Do either of you have suggestions?
If you're concerned about the quality of your child's educational experience, it won't be found in looking at his or her attire.
Right.
It'll be found in the life of the mind and the fabric of the intellect, not in the cloth. I think there's no classical resource that either Jeff or I are aware of. Kim Hayes, who's an anthropologist, a woman from California, has written a very interesting book comparing historically military schools with historically Friends schools. And I think one who had an interest in contrasting some values, what's quite remarkable is that she draws very similar conclusions. There's a strong thread of patriotism in both traditions, but expressed very differently. And that's the richness of our society and our culture. So I don't see any particular resource I could point to, but I do think that online searches like Google and so forth are places one can look. And perhaps simply talking to and interviewing people in one's community.
You have really brought a lot of wisdom to the table, and all the parents who are listening are going to be beneficiaries of this. So Mr. Jeff Jones from Potomac School, thank you so much. And Mr. Bruce Stewart of the Sidwell Friends School, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Right on.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 159. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you are tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website at http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.